We'll continue our study today, and hopefully next week we'll finish up everything unless there's questions or comments that we need to go deeper into. Today we're going to finish up domestic relationships for the man that is desiring to become an elder to meet those qualifications. We've gone through qualification, we kind of listed down six different categories, experience, then also we've come now to this family, and we talked last week about husband and one wife, and we pretty well, I think, feel like we have pretty well interpreted scriptures as Paul intended, and usually the easiest way to interpret those scriptures as you're reading it, it says what it says. And we go from there. Unless we find other scriptures that tell us differently. So we all combine those all together and make sure we interpret properly. But like I said, this week we're going to finish up on the domestic or family relationships of the elder those desiring to become an elder. In Titus, the first chapter, and also in 1 Timothy, the third chapter. That's where we're going to be going from today. We're going to hit a couple other things that Paul wrote in the book of Colossians and also in the book of Ephesians. We're going to touch on those lightly today, too. but what I want to look at today, if we look in 1 Timothy, the third chapter, and begin in verse number 4. It says, he must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? So we're looking at that, and let's go to Titus, the first chapter. That way we have both of them in front of us as we look at these qualifications that we're going to be discussing today. In verse number 6, in Titus, the first chapter, it says, namely, if any man is above reproach to husband of one wife, having children who believe, not accused of disposition or rebellious or rebellion or unruly, as some have interpreted or have translated. So we talked, like I said, the husband of one wife, we decided on that, or I believe we've came to a conclusion on that. And then also now we want to kind of touch upon another man-made controversy, as we have had a man-made controversy on husband and one wife. If we look at the scripture, it tells us husband and one wife. Pretty much says what it says. And I think we can interpret it as that. And same way with children that are faithful or children that believe. Well, even before we get into that, and he says he must be one who manages his own household well. Okay, if you think of management, a place or a company well, what would that tell you? Not looking at the family, just looking as an outside thing, as one that manages well. What would that mean to you?
Smoothly, no hubbub, no drama.
Yeah. Yeah, he has control of everything, and he's able to look forward to different things. And that's going to be another thing we talk about later on. But he's going to be kind of, what's best for this family? What's best for his family in God's eyes? He's going to be a Christian man that is looking first to God and how he should take care of his household, what his responsibility is as a husband, as a father, as a leader of the household. As you think of that, and leader of the household, what would his responsibilities go? We'll talk about father and husband in a minute, but what would his responsibilities be far as looking back over the man's reputation, back over the man's experience, his history? What would be notable about that man as a leader in that household?
Provider. Look at the head, he's a protector of that household.
Yes. Anything else?
Honest.
Dependable. There's still one you guys are missing, number one.
Lead by example.
Lead by example, exactly. That's not number one, though.
Godly.
Godly man. So if he's a godly man, what's first on his mind?
God.
Exactly, God. So he's going to be notable for that. Is he going to provide? Yes. If he's a godly man, is he going to do all those things everybody listed? Oh, yeah. He's going to be known for that. But his main character, main thought is what is pleasing to God in this family, for this family, I should say. And so he's going to be leading by example. He's going to be a Christian man. He's going to have the attitude that God would have for a Christian man to have. He would be like Abraham. He would be like some of the other fathers, Jacob, Isaac, some of the other fathers we've seen throughout the history of. Go ahead.
It's kind of like the two greatest commandments, obey God, and then everything else.
Everything else falls right along. Yeah. So we see what he is to be a leader. We look at his past experience. Has he done that in the last years of it as he's grown older? Okay, now we go to a husband. What type of a man would he be as a husband in that family?
Faithful.
Faithful.
Selfless.
Selfless. There's several things here. I mean, not several, but there's things that he's notable.
He's the head of the wife, even as Christ is head of the church. The great responsibility is he brings up his family and everything.
Exactly. That's the main thing. I think that's the first point. And then also, how should I say it without giving you the answer? What does he consider his wife as?
He loves her as himself.
As himself, exactly. And there's also something else he thinks of. Pardon me? Yeah, they're one. But are they not fellow heirs? And he treats her as a fellow heir. Yes, yeah. She helps in that, and she helps in the management of that household. And she respects her husband, and he respects her. He's not leading as a tyrant, but he's considerate. And that's another thing. A man that is aspiring to be an elder, and we're going to get into this a little bit later, but kind of goes along with this. Does he compromise? And kind of watch how you answer that. Yeah, exactly.
If God's word is teaching against him, he doesn't compromise. But if it doesn't, he needs to compromise, for the betterment of his wife, then he does.
Yes, and that's the good point there. We have a problem. This is the answer, my answer. That's it. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you think. It's the way. So how's that going to translate over into the church? Exactly. It's going to be kind of like saying, hey, I'm the elder here. This is the way it's going to be. No questions asked. When it's not even dealing with doctrine. When it's dealing with things that may help the congregation, may help outsiders see the congregation. So, and this is kind of going to go along with self-will, just my way or no way. But that's not the way this man is. And it shows in his family, the way he brings up his family, the way he manages his household, it shows forth that.
He says consideration about his wife in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter. It said by the conversation of the wife that she might win her husband. So it's a mutual thing that they're working together on. Yeah. As you said, as being heirs together.
Right. And that's how we're going to get to the next part. We see he's a good leader. He's a good husband. He does what God requires of him. And he doesn't do this because it's commanded to. It's because he desires to be that way. Same way with as a leader. And he aspires to the office of an eldership. It's not because he wants the job. It's because he loves the church. And he wants to help it lead it in a way that is going to be pleasing to God, because he realizes that we're only upon this earth for a short time. We're sojourners here. We got a higher goal that we're going after. And he has desire to help those within the church. He is under his rule. So as we see that, then we see that his husband, his wife, and the husband, he leads in such a way that is respectable. One that would desire to follow after him because of the way his example he sets. Now the next one is children that are what? No, let's go stop. We won't go that far yet. Let's go. We'll go that in a minute. But and we could switch around. But what is his? How are his children?
Obedient to him.
Yeah, they're in obedient to him. They're under control. He has control of them. And why? And how does he gain that control or that respect?
Good leader, he's gonna demand them, as they say, teach your children the way they should go and they shall not depart.
Yeah. So he's going to be
the teacher.
Yeah. And we went back as Carrie said, an example. What kind of example is he gonna set for his kids? They're one that's gonna wanna follow him because of his consistency, because of his example showing that the Lord's first. And then also, what's it say in Ephesians concerning the Father? What's he going to be doing? Anybody know that right off the top of their head? That's in Colossians, but yeah. That's one of them. You're right. In Ephesians, the... let's see. I may have... Yes. Yes. And then go a little bit further. It says, oh, you're right. I was thinking it's in Colossians, sorry. It says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and admonition of the Lord. Sorry, you're right. But then over here in Colossians, so what's he going to do? What's his father going to do? He's going to discipline them. He's going to bring them in instruction. Instruction in what? He's going to make sure that they know God, not only by his example, but also by his teaching them. So he's going to be teaching them in word and deed, correct? Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then over in Colossians, the third chapter, it says, children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not expirate, I think that's how you...
Exasperate,
thank you. I looked at that this morning and tried to sound it out and make sure I could hear it and sound it right. Then I didn't, but thanks. So that they will not lose heart. So what does that mean?
Well, you can discipline your children to the point, and you can browbeat them to the point that they finally just rebel and then they don't come in here.
Okay. You keep pounding on, and number one, no positive teaching, all negative. No optimistic, all pessimistic. So you got, the father has to know, and him and the wife are together on this, the parents. So they're going to teach that way. And a thing that bothers me is I always hear people saying, I'm reading this book on how to raise kids. There's a book that's been written how many thousands of years ago? And it never has changed. And does it tell you how to raise your child?
Yeah.
Is there anything that happens in this society that you can't answer as far as a child in the Bible? Okay. No. But they make millions of dollars off of those books. And it changes every, 10 years how to do it?
They say they don't come with an instruction manual, but yes, we do have
one. We have one, yeah. Yeah, and also experience helps a little bit with that. Instruction. But as we see that, so he has his children, they're not unruly, they're not rebellious, but they're what?
Respectful.
But and you as a teacher, you probably have seen that and traced. Can you tell if a child is being brought up in a good way by the way he is in the classroom? Yeah. Because I've heard about my grandkids and stuff, and like the oldest one works out at Walmart, and I've talked to people out here because I'm a guy that kind of gabs anyway. But they said, and I find out that he's my grandson. I said, boy, he said, he's quiet, he's respectful, he's very. And I said, well, I didn't raise him, so it's his mom and his dad. But that's what you want to hear. And that's another thing, too. The outside world. What are you going to think of a man that has unruly children? Is he going to be respectful? I should say. Also, what if a man becomes an elder and he's telling someone how to raise their kids and they said, you need to sweep off your own back step before you sweep mine off. So,
practice what you preach.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, even as Christians, we should practice what we preach. Now we get to the one part of it that has been a controversy. There's two sides. And it says, those that are faithful, those that believe. So I'm just going to open that up for discussion, then we'll carry on from that. I got a couple things that I'm going to look into. What does that mean? Children that are faithful, children that believe. Or children that believe. Don't be backward. Pardon me? Oh, you stole my thunder. Great. That's right. There, if a child is faithful, he's going to be faithful to his father. He's going to be faithful to Christ. Correct? If he believes, he's going to believe in his family or his father. He's going to believe in Christ. So to me, he's going to be obedient to both. And what does that tell about the man? Go ahead. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're saying some translations say faithful
and some say faithful. Yeah. 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 I believe the King James says believe or faithful. I can't remember which one it is.
New American says
believe. King James says faithful? Okay. Yeah. But the same Greek word is used. P-I-S-T-O-S, I think is the Greek word. And it means to believe, to be obedient. But yeah, I'm with you, Jetta, on it. That's going to show what type of man. It shows he has his children that are obedient to him. And it also shows that he's been leading them in the Lord. He's been instructing them in the Lord that they are believers. They're obedient. And I think that would show forth the experience of a man. Can a man that has children that are, say, 7, 8, 5, 6 years old, would he be considered? No, be considered for eldership.
Oh, no, it's not.
Yeah, exactly. And right, you're right, Gene. So that's going to show forth that man what he's doing. Okay, this is too easy. I figured it'd be a long discussion over it. Pretty easy. I'm glad we all see what it says and believe what it says.
They go back to teaching them and they shall not depart.
Yeah. And also circumstances happen that for no control of the parent.
They get out away from home.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But as long as you're under control of the parent. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I thought that's what you're saying.
Jim?
Yes.
I've got several versions on this. The Holman Christian Standard Bible says Titus 1:6. It says, "Who are blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of wildness or rebellion."
That gives it a little more, because you kind of get, and that's translated on later up in this or last century, was it last century when that was translated? I think that's when that one was.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
The Common English Bible says about the same thing, what you're saying, if I remember correctly. But I wanted to read, everybody knows Zur, right? Who Zur was? Okay, he has a different take on this. And I want to read his, he makes good points, but I think he needs to combine it together. let me see, here in, okay, he uses the word faithful, and he goes ahead and gives a pistos, I think is the how you pronounce the Greek word for faithful or for believe. And he said, Thayer says, it's one who has become convinced that Jesus is the Messiah, the author of salvation. And Robertson, a believer, a Christian, I have consulted four other lexicons, and they have defined it virtually the same as two just quoted. He said, I've consulted also five translations that render it believing. I now give the other view. And first of all, he's talking about there's two views on it. One, that it's they're faithful to their father, and that's it. And then the other view is they're faithful to their father or to the Lord. That's what they're talking about. But here is his. He says, I have consulted these, and this is the translation. He said, now I shall give the other view and state that I am not fully convinced that it is required that an elder's children be faithful members of the church, and shall give my reasons for saying so. And he goes on and talks about the lexicon there. But he said, it's true the lexicons in various translations generally render the word as believing, but that would still have left unsettled the question whether the child is to be believer in Christ or in his father. For if he believes in his father, he's likely to be obedient to him. That would show that the father has control over his child, which is really the point that Paul was making. And then also in 1 Timothy 3, 4, and 12, where the same point is under consideration with reference to children of elders and deacons, there is no intimidation of their religious relation to the Lord, but that the father is to have control of them. Therefore, my conclusion is that the faithful children is equivalent to the controlled children in 1 Timothy 3, 4, and 12. And hence, they are to be believed in and be faithful to the Father regardless of whether they are members of the church or not, or that they are not old enough to be members. I think M's good points he makes, and I think they're right, but I think he has to combine it. I think it has to be combined. Everyone understand what he was talking about there? And I think he's right on that point, but I think he has to go another step further. I think he's dealing with the Father and obedient to Christ. Any questions, any comments? Yes.
So I have two questions. Uh-huh.
Hopefully I can answer them, or somebody can.
Paul means believers in Christ. Why? I don't think any of us can actually. Why then didn't he include that qualifier in the letter to Timothy? That seems like an important piece.
Well, that's what Zur's saying. His answer is that they're both the one in Titus is concerning believer in their father, obedient to their father, as that's what it means in the fourth verse of 1 Timothy. That's what he's saying. Yeah. So why? I don't know.
And the word there translated believe or faithful can also be translated as obedient.
Yes. Yeah.
You know how, I should have told us, sir, how often does Paul use that word and what a word?
Oh, there's quite a few times. I don't know. I don't have it written down, but there's quite a few times he uses that same word for believe, for obedient, and then also for faithful throughout his writings, throughout his letters. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah, so that's how I rationalize it.
And I think going along with it, look at other subjects that we have to come to a necessary conclusion on. It doesn't say you have to do such and such, but by necessary inference, it's there. If you talk about the Lord's Supper, if you talk about singing, if you talk about prayer, in the worship service. Does it say on the first day of the week you are to sing hymns and songs? No, not. But it says that when you're together to do that. So when do we come together? First day of the week. Same way with your Lord's, partaking of the Lord's Supper. Does it say take the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week? Well, we have an example of them doing that. But we take that Acts 27 and we go back also to 1 Corinthians 11 chapter and find out, well, okay, that was a common thing. They came together on the first day of the week to break bread. No, I'm not saying that's kind of way. I'm like Jed, that's kind of way I look at it.
I'm not saying that this doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Say it's the children have to be Christians. That makes sense. I'm not.
Yeah.
That's not my argument. I'm not even arguing the other side. I'm just trying to.
We're debating.
See it from the other side. Ask why. If it is that they are Christians, but we know that this word can be translated just. Which would fall more in line with the next part where it says not accused of dissipation or rebellion, and it would match perfectly with everything.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to, but it would.
Yeah.
What is there in the context here that would make us hold to that more strict definition?
I think as you're looking to the father's or the man's past, his history, as you're looking to that, you're seeing, okay, this is the type of man he's leading these children, and some have become obedient. I'm not going to say that all of them have to be obedient, because some of them may not be quite to that point yet. But by his experience, or not experience, but his past history, it shows that his children have been obedient to the faith. And then it turns, let's see, how else can I say it that would help? It's like all the other qualifications. You're seeing his past history and seeing where he is at this time. So I think that's what it's dealing with there. And as Zur has said here, he believes it's just dealing with the children. And it's talking about how the father rules his household, but also it's talking about the reputation of the father outside the household too, and what you're seeing of that father. And I think that's kind of how we get it to come together that way. I think it has to be both ways. I think both verses are telling us that. That he manages his household well, but he also has children that believe, children that are faithful. Does that help you?
Well, I think all those things that you said go to the same argument for them just being obedient to the father.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's we're actually talking about a pretty small window in the time of the end of life, right? This, you know, kid that's 5, 6, 9, 10,
yeah,
whatever the age is. Well, we wouldn't say that person doesn't have the experience. We don't have enough knowledge about whether they're able to be in their household yet. Then when the child leaves the home, they're 18 or 20 or whatever they are, then they're out of the authority of their father. And we say if they're not a believer or they at that point, then that's not necessarily indicative of the father management. So we're really talking like a 5 to 10 year window,
yeah,
here.
Mm-hmm.
For them to not only be unrebellious or not be dissipation, but also to become Christian. So does that, I don't know if that...
Well, and you kind of think about, say a man who we're considering to be, that wants to be an elder, we're considering him to be an elder. He has children 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, whatever, still, or 22 still living in his household. They're under his control then. They're still living in his household. I know they're out far as I'm concerned, but we see some still living. So they're under the father's control. If they've not become Christians by then, the question will be asked, well, why is he, what is he doing? It's not right. That's what they're going to look at. The outside's going to look at. We may know, but then again, we may not. But they're going to ask, well, why? What's here? Something's wrong. So that's kind of an example you got to kind of think of. And it may It's hard to say. I mean, I hate to say, this is because of this. Because he didn't do what he's supposed to do, they're not Christian. I'd be hard for me to say that. Go ahead.
And we look at the verses, you know, as an educator, I look at how it's, the structure is set up. 5 and 6 are one sentence.
Right.
The first part is talking about appointing them, but then the rest of that sentence is talking about these are personal things we have to look at. So when it talks about the husband and one wife, the children that are obedient, then that's in his home. It's not talking about now when he's, you know, as a leader and as a Christian. This is home examples. I know when Dad was being talked to about becoming an elder, he and Mike had some, you know, heart-to-heart conversations, and not that Dad believed one way or another, but one of his questions was, you know, people say, well, he has to have more than one children, because it says children, you know. And also, my dad has 5 kids. 2 are faithful, 2 are not, and 1 doesn't have the mentality to be one way or another. Did that disqualify him for being an elder? And like I said, he didn't believe one way or another. But like you were saying, if they're out of the house, you know, this is when they're in his house. This is when they're in his home. It's not when they come together, you know, and worship and as Christians. So the structure of it is, you know, that 5 and 6 is one sentence talking about this is him individually away from the church. And then we get into verse 7, where we get a new sentence, and that's going to carry over how he behaves in the church.
Yeah, it makes that helps out, you know, because it kind of, but you said one child, but that, I wasn't going to get into that because, yeah, there is been question brought up, well, if he don't have more than one child, then is he qualified? Well, the word child is used in several different ways and can and mean children also. I didn't want to go into all that, but I was hoping you didn't catch that.
There's been debates in the Church of Christ in this also that they didn't physically have their own children, they adopted. Well, that's okay.
Yeah, and that's another argument. There's several arguments on it, or debatable, but like with adoption, once you adopt out, that child's your child. It's your blood. It's not, I mean, whatever you want to say, it's still. And we, as Christians, were adopted into the family of God. Were we Jews? No, we were not. We were obedient to the faith. We were obedient to the gospel. Jews, were they able to say, okay, I'm saved because I'm a Jew? No. Obedient to the gospel. So, kind of.
That's a really good point. That'd be like equivalent to saying that because we were adopted into the church, because we're adopted, well, Christ really isn't our father.
Yeah.
God's not really our father.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, and then the children, like I say, you can look it up. There's no need to go unless there's a lot. Somebody has a big question on it. But that child is one child or 10 children is what he's referring to here. And you can trace it throughout the date. Go clear back to Sarah when she said, I'll be the mother of children. She didn't have children. She had 1. So that's kind of pretty easy to me. Like I said, if you want to go further in, we can go further in. Any other questions on family relationships? Or not relationships, family relation, past experience, past history? Okay. We're going to jump into character. Okay. There's things in here in, as we look, yes. Go ahead.
What do you think it means? Mine says being wild and disobedient.
Well, wild, think of it. What was wild?
I mean, you can go to the end of it and say for sure, you know, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Off the deep end and yeah. Wild and disobedient. Yeah. I get it.
Like when the mother and father in the Old Testament they were the first one to throw a stone at him.
Right. But I mean, I'm sure there's a little, I don't know how you define that.
Disobedient is pretty well, I think, pretty well answerable. It's one that does not obey the parents, does not obey the father in anything that he does. tells him to do. Unruly and wild. When you think of the word wild, I think that's the answer, out of control. He has no control over that child. Whatever the reason may be.
But I think you can think of the extreme, you know,
yeah.
The child's a partier, they come out, they're in the middle of the night, they get in trouble with the law, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you can go to that.
You can go to that end and see it pretty clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But do you, I mean, how do you define that when it becomes, hey, this, I don't know how to say it, but I mean, you know the extreme.
Right.
You can take that one out, you know that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you bring it back closer to, you know, disobedient.
Where's the drop, cut off line?
Yeah. How do you define if a child is obedient or disobedient? Because that's where, to me, mm-hmm. it gets a little. The wild part, I get.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
We're all disobedient at some time.
Right.
Everybody.
Right. And
I think this is my thing, sir. Boys mature differently than girls do. I've not seen a boy yet that didn't have a rebellious streak in him.
Yeah.
At some time in his life, and I bet every one of you in here go, yeah, yeah. And that's a different thing to consider because boys don't mature. Some of them don't mature until they're 23, 24, 77.
Go ahead and make it 87.
Well, I think.
Well, I think, and you that are teachers, you can see a child that's disobedient, a child that is unruly. I think you can see it, whether it's here or whether it's out here in the public. You can tell, okay, they have no control over that child. And it's not maybe so much as they're wild, but they're disrespectful to their parents, they're disrespectful to whatever authority that is around them. And like I said, it may not be being a while, but I'm not going to do it.
But I could see this being a very...
It could be.
Disobedient is the same as yours, and the same as Gerald, and the same as Gene.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can be pretty ambiguous in terms of what does that mean? And I don't know how to define that.
I think there's meant to be a little bit of gray area here, as with all of these other character definitions. There is no... I mean, with the exception of a couple specific acts, there is no specific like cutoff. Not quick temper. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean if your team loses, you throw something? Well, that may be a sign.
Might be.
There's gray areas, yeah. And I think part of it is because we all have to know the person well enough to be able to make a judgment on whether they think they are disqualified for this or not. And so part of it is knowing someone well enough and being around them outside the time of worship and being able to see how they are with their kids, see how their kids are without them there, seeing if their kids are IU fans. I mean, these are important things. But, no, I think stuff like this is supposed to be a little gray. They're supposed to be, like Alan said, there's the extremes. We know those are
right.
Definite. There's supposed to be an area there where we either give grace or we say, okay, that's definitely over the line. And it's going to be a little different for everyone.
Well, and
you don't use your common sense for this stuff.
There you go. There you go.
Nobody's going to be an expert.
No.
There's not going to be anybody.
No.
Because I'm telling you, there's no perfect man here on this earth. And it didn't say that this had to be a perfect man to be an expert. So you're going to have to use some common sense with some of this stuff. And take the best that you got.
Yeah. And you can see by the man's past history, how he, on situations, how did he handle it? Yeah. You're going to know if he's quick-tempered or if he's, you're scared to say something because it may fly off the handle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who still don't. No.
It's, do you lose your temper every day, 24/7?
Yeah.
No, there's just a certain thing that it, and then you repent and you go on. Mm-hmm. We all get mad.
Yeah.
We all get angry.
And I guess the good point, what you and Gene said, you have to consider the man and consider, know him, and use your common sense. You're going to understand. Same way with the disobedient. To me, disobedient to the point of no respect for authority. That's, you can be disobedient to your parents, but then you realize or you're corrected, and then you don't do it again for a little bit.
It's also a habit, I think.
Yeah,
it has
yeah.
to be habitual. It's not just one time.
Right.
You know, it has to be a habit.
Yeah. But like I said, you can see it. You can tell. I mean, is there step one, step two that you got to, hey, he does this one? No. I think it's, like you said, a habit, or is it the family's in disrupt? It's disrupted. Yeah, go ahead.
Then New American Standard has the word rebellious instead of wild.
Yeah.
Same kind of concept, but it's, you know, once again, we're going back, this is what's happening in our home. And the gray area, like Jim was talking about, Jim, your ideas of how to raise your kids are different than mine. You know, but we probably, I would hope, as Christians, we all have an expectation. If our
yep.
kids are in our home, they're all attending services with us. Yeah. If you can't get your child out of bed and you don't want to argue with them and they just don't want to come to services, then they're rebellious.
Yeah.
They're not doing their jobs.
Yeah.
You know, but my rules are different than, you know, even the way I was raised. Dad did not let us sing, hum, whistle at the table.
Yeah.
My grandpa didn't let us put our elbows on the table.
Yeah.
You know, and he
yeah.
would hit the table and scare the snot out of him. Mm-hmm. He did. You know, but those were his guidelines, so I followed them. I don't care if my kids put their elbows on the table or not. You know, it doesn't bother me. But it's, I'm the dad, these are my expectations, do my kids follow it?
Mm-hmm.
And like Roberta said, boys do go through that rebellious
stage. Oh, yeah.
They're trying to figure out for themselves how to be a man.
Yeah.
So are we looking at that time period and the first time that they make that mistake and they rebel against the dad that, you know, he's disqualified? No, because he's also going to learn how to adapt to that individual child, you know, to get them to see the important things in life.
Yeah, and it,
so this has to be our habit. This
yep.
is how we're raising our kids. Not suddenly I wake up one day and decide, our family's going to be Christians and you're going to live that way. And
yeah. You have to be consistent throughout. Yeah. Anything else? That part, did that help you a little bit?
Ain't all good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think, it just keeps going back. They're considering the man for this office. Does he meet these qualifications? Does he fail in some? Oh, yeah, going to. Even after he's an elder, he's going to fail in those things. So it's, and I want to say it's not a work in progress. He's already exemplified his life as a Christian and his family as a father of that family and a husband as husband of that wife, how he reacts to different situations. And like Jed said, you're going to know him. Common sense is going to say, hey, how's he going to handle this? Well, I know how he's going to handle it. Anything else? Okay, we'll do characteristics or character and habit next week, and we'll probably finish up unless we go overtime next week. So if there's no questions, we'll close up there, and thanks for your comments.